Welcome to the Sanchez Effect. So the United States has attacked Iran. And now the world is waiting to find out what Iran is going to do. There is all kinds of talk about Iran shutting down the Strait of Hormuz. No, it has not happened yet. But if it happens, it takes this to a new dimension, a new scale for what this war is starting to look like. You should know that Iran is still pounding Israel. Israel is still pounding Iran, so that hasn't stopped. By the way, just a little while ago, literally minutes ago, I had a chance to sit down with the finance minister of Russia to ask him what is going to happen to the world market. You know, the oil markets in particular could blow up. And who will stand to gain? Who will stand to lose? There is so much to talk about. Not to mention, we're going to have probably one of the smartest guests we could have on a day like this joining us from the United States of America, as we like to say. He's going to be with us here just in a lickety split. That's Larry Wilkerson. This is the Sanchez Effect. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this. All right, so maybe we start with a conversation that I had just moments ago. I had a chance to talk to Anton Siluanov. Now, this is the finance minister for Russia. Obviously, if something happens at the Strait of Hormuz, Russian oil becomes very, very valuable. Because if it's not coming out of the Persian Gulf, guess where it's going to have to come from? Guess where China gets most of its oil? The Persian Gulf. Again, if they can't get it out of the Persian Gulf, they're going to be turning to Russia. So that's kind of part of the dynamic here that could possibly happen as well. So look, Russia, China, India, the United States, those countries, the Global South community, are looking at this situation as well to see which way it's going to go. Let me just start with this. We've got a lot on tap, but I want to start with this conversation I had just a little while ago with Anton Siluanov. He's the finance minister of Russia. Take it.
There's talk that they might shut down the Strait of Hormuz. If they shut down the Strait of Hormuz, according to some of the analysts on Wall Street, the price of oil could go to $130 a barrel. Not to mention the fact that China gets almost 80%, I believe I read, correct me if I'm wrong, of course, of its oil through the Strait of Hormuz. If China cannot get its oil through the Strait of Hormuz, where are they going to turn? I would think Russia. Right?
Yes, that may be so, but we know that there have been tensions in the Strait of Hormuz before, and I don't remember a decision to close it. Therefore, of course, if we see a rise in prices, the Russian Federation will have more income, but we will not spend these oil and gas profits. We will direct them to our reserves, to the National Welfare Fund. You know that we have excess incomes that do not go to expenditure items, but to our reserves. I will repeat once again that yes, it is possible that the situation we talked about will develop, that oil prices could rise to about $100 per barrel, but we do not know how the situation will develop further. With the tension that has developed in this region, we do not want to talk about Russia extracting any additional income.
Do you know what I found fascinating about that answer? Most of us, I and a lot of the folks, many of you who are watching me right now from around the world, you come from countries where your governments are spending money they don't have. They are spending money, printing money they do not have. You just heard the foreign minister of Russia say that if they were, because obviously they would make a lot of money on this situation, not in a good way. Obviously, nobody wants a war. I don't think he does either. But, you know, if the price of oil goes from 79 to $130, like some on Wall Street are predicting it would, obviously there would be a huge surplus there. And he just said, if we did suddenly make a lot of money as a result of this, we would put it into our reserve fund. We wouldn't spend it. We'd leave it in reserve to possibly be able to use it in the future. What a different way of looking at things. That just caught my attention. I wanted to share it with you. All right. So what's going on in the United States? I don't think I've ever seen anything like this in the United States. For the first time in my lifetime, and I'm old, I'm seeing that there's this true dysfunction being felt by the American people. For the first time in a long time, I'm seeing Americans angry about what could happen with this war. Angry because, first of all, they're tired of the war in Iraq. They got tired of the war in Afghanistan. Some people are still tired from the war in Vietnam and Syria and Libya and all those other places. And now they're being told by a president who told them he would not go to war that suddenly we're bombing Iran. So that in and of itself has Americans angry on both sides, including the people who voted for him in the MAGA movement and including Republicans. But there's something else at play here. There's this mood in America as well that the only reason we're doing this is because Bibi Netanyahu is all but ordering us or manipulating us into doing this. And a lot of Americans are feeling that and they're voicing their opinion as well. So I want to give you kind of a montage, if you will, of different viral sound bites that have just taken off in America, and they're now going all over the country. Here's the first one. This is Bernie Sanders. He's giving a speech when all of a sudden he's told that we have just bombed Iran. And here's his reaction, and then watch the reaction from the people in the crowd who are following his speech. Go ahead, take that, Gene.
Statement from Donald Trump, quote, "We have completed our very successful attack on the three nuclear sites in Iran, etc."
No more war. No more war. No more war. And you know what was interesting about that, watching that, is that they just kind of broke out. It was just a natural response. It's not like, you know, somebody was leading a chant or anything like that. And it was spontaneous. It happened just at that moment. So the reason I wanted to play that for you is because it gives you a sense of the psyche right now that's taking place in America. The other thing is, there's a lot of people in the MAGA base, you know. Steve Bannon loves President Trump, got help get President Trump elected. He's blasting him, criticizing him for this. Tucker Carlson got President Trump elected. He's blasting him for this, criticizing for this. Even some on the way right, I mean, you know, almost cuckoo right, are suddenly blasting this war, and in particular, going after Israel in a not very nice way. This is offensive, what I'm about to play for you, and I apologize. These are not our, you know, emotions or our statements or what we believe, certainly not what I believe. But listen to what this man says.
And our leaders are low-life scum that little girls so the Jews can screw America. That's what's happening in this country. I just said it. That's what's going on in this country. And our FBI is corrupt. The Supreme Court is corrupt. The Justice Department is corrupt. The news media is corrupt. The whole country is corrupt.
That's a lot. I mean, those are very strong words. And let me say, I apologize for anybody who was offended because he used the word Jews. And there's a huge difference between saying that what Israel is doing is wrong, or that Zionists are controlling the White House or controlling the U.S. government. And that's fair, because I think it's an assumption, or at least something that a lot of people have seen over the years. And I think it's a fair comment or criticism. To go after Jews or anybody's religion is not fair, and it's not wrong, and it's not right. But nonetheless, it captures the essence of this argument that's going back and forth in America right now. Here's another one. This is Dave Portnoy. He's one of the richest men in America. He started started something called Barstool Sports. Barstool Sports is like a podcast network that millions and millions of people watch. It's about sports, but it's also a little bit about politics and about very attractive women, interestingly enough. Look, the guy's got a very good business. And he goes on the air and says to his employees, from now on, nobody's allowed to criticize or make fun or tell jokes about Jews. You can make jokes about anybody in America. He happens to be Jewish, I guess. But he says, you can't tell jokes about Jews. And he says it to one of his employees and tells him on the air that if he does it, he'll fire him. Watch this moment.
You're an idiot.
Okay, continue.
You're literally saying people should be allowed to make Jew jokes, say whatever they want, right That's
yes, I think
saying.
People should be allowed to make jokes.
So how many fucking Jews have to be killed before you stop?
Then everybody, I don't think.
What else? Where else is that happening with the religion or people?
But Dave, you're telling a comedian not to make a joke?
It's not a comedian.
I'm with you. But you said stop all jokes.
Jew jokes of that nature
We'll ban Jew jokes of that nature. We'll get the Constitution. We'll get Congress and stop Jew jokes of that nature.
I'll go back to this.
Yeah.
When does freedom of speech impinge on freedom of religion?
I think freedom of speech is the most important thing in this country.
Freedom of speech is the most important thing in the United States. At least that's the way the people who built the United States said it. They said that it is the First Amendment, not two, not three, number one. The First Amendment of the United States says, Congress shall pass no laws to abridge a person's right to speech. You know, it's interesting to hear these, and I just wanted to give you a sense. I know sometimes people get mad, they say things they don't mean. We're not trying to disparage anybody on this show, but it just kind of captures where America is right now based on this bombing of Iran, based on this conversation where, you know, the United Nations and many around the world have now agreed, all but in unison, that what Israel is doing in Gaza is a genocide. And there's this massive argument taking place in America in particular, where there is, in fact, a very strong Zionist foothold on the politics on the country. And so that leads us to this question. Is that foothold, is that Bibi Netanyahu, very strong Israel influence on America, causing America to do basically Israel's handiwork? Is America going to war with Iran because Israel told it to, because Israel wants it to? That's what people in the United States are thinking right now. And it may not be an unfair assertion or thought process. And it's what's happening. So, which leads us to the final part of this conversation that you and I need to have on this day. You and I need to talk about whether what we're seeing in Iran is a preamble to exactly what we saw happen in the past. In other words, this is Iraq 2.0. And I was there. Look, one of the reasons I got fired from CNN was I started criticizing the government for some of this stuff. And I'm going to show you something now. This is Rick Sanchez, back when I looked younger and didn't have any wrinkles, on the air with somebody I truly believe is a courageous man. This is Colonel Larry Wilkerson. He was one of my usual guests on CNN. I think he may have helped to get me fired because I kept having conversations about this where I was criticizing my government for what we were doing in Iraq. And I said, why is Dick Cheney, a man who owns a company or is the president or CEO of a company that's making billions of dollars on war, why is he allowed to make a decision that the United States should go to war? If you own a company that makes money on war, of course you're going to want to go to war, I argued on the air, and actually had this conversation about that, which is starting to look a lot like what's going on now with Larry Wilkerson. Here it is.
I think I can tell you with some firmness that from 2001 to 2005 on national security issues and some domestic issues, as Bart Gellman has pointed out in his book, Angler, Dick Cheney was calling the shots. I think that speech at AEI yesterday showed more than anything else I could ever say who thought he was president of the United States from 2001 to 2005.
That's a remarkable thing that you just said. Am I hearing you right that in name, Bush was the president of the United States, but in decision-making and in actions, Dick Cheney was really the president of the United States?
When it came to critical national security issues, I think I'm right.
Well, we look a hell of a lot older, but here we are, Larry Wilkerson joining us now here live. You know, when you and I had that conversation, oh, so many years ago, we literally had seen and had watched a government that was fed BS bad information or cooked intel go into a war that most Americans have eventually figured out was BS. Do you fear that the same thing is happening again, Larry?
I do, most assuredly. I'm almost confident, 99.9% confident that the same thing's happening again. I'll have to back up and tell you that I don't agree with this theory now that Israel is the bête noir in all of this, that it is the terrible offender in all this. I think the empire, the American empire, and that's the phrase I use today and have used for some time, is very frightened of an axis between Russia and China, and the fact that that axis is pulling the world's power in every component, no matter what element of power, state power you talk about, it's pulling it to the east, towards China. And we are creating an arc of crisis all the way from the Arctic to the Baltic, where our Norwegian friends on the northern flank of NATO are trying to take the Russians on in the Baltic and international waters, down to Ukraine, where everybody knows we're using a proxy and killing Ukrainians to try and get at Russia, down through Georgia, where we tried to overthrow the government. Indeed, we're still trying to overthrow the government in Georgia, all the way down to the Levant in the south of the Persian Gulf, where China's latest Base Road Initiative was going to take fruition. And we're trying to stop all of that. And this is just a part of that. This is a part of the warp move of that. But I'm not sure Trump knows anything about it. It's the people behind him.
Well, that wouldn't be any different than what happened with Bush when you were there working in that White House. Wouldn't be any different than Obama, according to some of what I've been reading lately about how Obama was basically handed bad intel and told, you got to do this, Mr. President, and then all of a sudden he did. So I guess there's nothing new about that. The only thing that surprises me about what you just said, or that I would, I guess, have to counter with, is if the United States doesn't want Russia and China to come together with Iran and several other of these countries that call themselves BRICS now, why the hell would they do everything possible to punish Russia so it has to run to China since they don't want to do business with them? Why would they sanction them? Why would they do these things, right? They're creating that union.
That's a key question. Henry Kissinger, George Kennan, others, meeting with Powell before they died, and all of them said, number one, Brent Scowcroft, number one mistake America had made was the expansion of NATO, and the number two mistake would follow from that, the compulsion of Russia to go to China.
Let me ask you about what happened in the Strait of Hormuz. If, in fact, the Strait of Hormuz is shut down, as you heard, the politicians, the parliament there in Iran has voted to do so, but they still haven't gotten permission, I suppose, from the premier leader. If the Strait of Hormuz shuts down, and let me show our viewers something. A lot of people still don't know what the hell the Strait of Hormuz is, so let's put it up on camera so our viewers can see what it looks like. Look at the countries there, okay? So look at Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE. All those countries have the oil coming out. It's a very significant part of the oil that goes to the entire world. They say maybe we can go 7 days, maybe 10 at most, if it's blocked, before there are huge issues with oil prices in the world. Larry, how big of an issue do you think that is, and what's the probability that they will do it?
Well, I have to back up a little bit and describe what I think has just happened. What's happened is either a political farce, and more evidence is coming out to that effect, or it was a very carefully choreographed non-bombing, if you will. We struck facilities in Natanz, Fordo, the critical ones in Fordo, and Isfahan. No planes came up to contest us. No air defense missiles were fired. It was like a candy store wall. Iran made no challenge whatsoever. Now, my intelligence out of Tehran tells me that they had moved almost everything that was critical, moved it into different secure locations. So even if the bombs worked, they wouldn't have done much damage. And I'm told that they didn't do that much damage even as it was. And if you know how deeply Fordo is buried and you know the capabilities of this GBU-57, you know that it wasn't going to do it. So Is this political theater in order to get some things going while Iran continues to pummel Israel, which it is doing assiduously? And what is the purpose of that, if it is? Or is this actually happening with an idiot in charge? That's a huge question in my mind right now. Now, I understand Iran has made a decision, temporary. The Ayatollah has to confirm it, that if they do anything in the Strait, all it will be is to block the Strait temporarily and watch the markets do what they do and watch the economies of the world do what they will do inevitably, and then sort of release it and let it go and say, we could do it again and we could do it for a longer time. Hmm. That would be an astute move. Thus far, Iran has been complete inside the envelope of international law. They have not done anything to violate that envelope. The violators have been Bibi Netanyahu and Donald Trump, and they are big violators. They would go down as war criminals if we were prosecuting ourselves.
You know, it almost seems to me, in fact, you know what? I got something that'll counter that. You're going to laugh because you and I have been on, you know, we've been to this rodeo before. I just got some tape of Fox News. Here's Fox News blowing this thing out of proportion. They're excited. They're giddy. They're laughing on the air. They're bragging about how we just knocked out the nuclear weapons inside of Iran. They got these two students. This is the reason I can't work at these stations anymore, by the way. Remember, I used to, well, when I was on CNN and I worked for these places, but they just seem like goofballs, and they're cheering on this war like, you know, it's a ball game or something. Watch. Here's the tape.
It's quite an impressive thing. Can fly up to 50,000 altitude, capable of mid-air refueling. David, I don't know how well we did that, but you know this better than anybody. Talk to us about, you know, questions over whether or not this can successfully be done.
Joey Jones just crushed that explanation. You guys hit the nail on the head. So really well done.
David, real quick answer. You've got the Air Force, the Navy. Who has the best fighter pilots?
The Marine Corps.
There we go.
And by the way, there's a lot of ha, ha, ha and stuff. But the part we cut out in there was the guy saying, oh, absolutely. We crushed it. We killed it. There's nothing left there anymore. I just look at some recon pictures a little while ago that showed me that the place looks exactly as it did before we hit it. I don't think they got it right.
Yeah, think Allah Ansar, the Houthis. We really beat them, didn't we?
Yeah.
They're back shooting again, and they're back shooting in the Red Sea. But more important than that, I think if you look at what has happened to this point, you're looking at, as I said before, a state, Iran, that we accuse of being an international pariah, criminal, you name it, that is adhering to everything that we set up in the world since 1945. They have not violated any aspect, not even with their nuclear program, really, because they're signatories to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, this additional safeguards and additional protocol. Israel's not, and Israel's got lots of weapons. They're the most dangerous nuclear power in the region, which, interestingly, Islamabad has just said. Bibi Netanyahu may not have caught this. He made a remark. He said, we need to get rid of that Islamic regime with nuclear weapons in Islamabad, too. I guarantee you they don't like him too much now. How about shipping 20 or 30 down to Saudi Arabia or maybe even some to Iran? Warheads, I mean. Hmm. That could very well happen. So we've got a state that's adhering to everything that we set up since 1945, Article 51 of the UN Charter, all the things that go along with that. And we've got a state that's violating up and down the map, and you got a big power like the United States supporting them and violating it itself. This was a criminal act to drop these bombs. Not only that, they didn't go to the Congress for constitutional authority.
And there's something else, Larry, that bothers me as an American. Hell, just as a human being, the fact that we tricked them, the fact that we made them think we were still going to be negotiating, the fact that we told them, you have until Sunday, we're going to be talking, and then we hit them 24 hours before that happened. And we just seem to have done it again because the president said we weren't going to do anything for at least a week, and then we you know, who's going to trust us, man?
No one. I think he delights in these Yamamoto-type, Saddam Hussein-type things. I really do. I think he delights in them. But again, I don't think this guy's in charge, just like George W. Bush wasn't in charge. I think we've got some people behind him who are orchestrating this. At the head of those people, in terms of the conductor of the orchestra, is Steve Miller. But there are lots of others like Charles Koch, Peter Thiel, Robert Mercer, you know, lots of people with lots of money.
Well, let me show you something. This is a report that just came out a little while ago. It was on the Gray Zone. I think we've got a shot of it. Show Larry this headline. I don't know if you had a chance to read this yet. I read this yesterday. I think the Gray Zone does some pretty good reporting on this. Here's what they say. They basically say that Ratcliffe, CIA guy, who, by the way, was a guy who was a mayor in some little town in Texas. Now he's the director of the CIA. He's basically a Mossad stenographer, and that he... And I've got the pics here to show you. Let's see. We've got Ratcliffe, CIA director. We've got Michael Carrilla. I think we've got... There's Ratcliffe, the new CIA director. And most people say he's got no military experience, no intel experience, but suddenly he's the head of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency because of his connections with the right people in the right places who happen to be in a very small country. You can figure out who it is. The other one is Michael Carrilla, who's also there. He's the head of CENTCOM, I guess. You could tell us more, Larry. You know who these guys are. And then they say the third person, there he is, the third person is Susie Wiles. And between those three, they are giving Mr. Trump cooked intel and getting him to act on these things the way you say other presidents have been bamboozled in the past. That's the report on Gray Zone. What do you make of it?
I think there's some truth to that, except I've just heard that Susie Wiles has been put in the shadows for some reason. I don't know why. Let me give you another example. Those guys on Fox, for example. We flew two B-2s, 19 hours, all the way to Iraq, the opening shot of the Iraq war in 2003. Those two B-2s had four 2,000-pound satellite-guided bombs on them. They were supposed to decapitate the state of Iraq. They were going after Saddam Hussein. Not much has been covered on this. They dropped both their bombs. Both their bombs struck their target, a place called Doral Farms, where Saddam was supposed to be, and they returned to Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri. Well, they thought they, you know, I can still remember the high fives of the pilots getting out of the B-2s. They killed 33 innocent civilians. Saddam Hussein was nowhere near there. George W. Bush, when he was told, shrugged his shoulders and said, well, that's war. That's not war. That's a decapitation thing, just like Israel does all the time. It's assassination. It's against the rules of war. And we're on the side of those who violate them increasingly.
Let me ask you a question about what happens if this shooting match continues. Let's suppose Mr. Rubio's right, and somehow this thing is contained to the point where the United States doesn't have to do much of anything directly other than to furnish weapons and support with intel and, you know, those other things that we often do in situations like this, like we've done in Iraq. Iran keeps shooting. Israel keeps shooting. Iran keeps shooting. Israel keeps shooting. We see all these missiles every day like we've been seeing. Who stands to gain or lose the most in that scenario?
Were it to be isolated and that be the only aspect of it, Israel, big time, because Israel's running out of missiles and Iran has lots of missiles left. And they have lots of missiles left that are even more powerful and more difficult to shoot down, if not impossible, hypersonic missiles that they haven't shot all of yet. They have a lot more of them. What's happening right now is they're having to shoot, and you know this, you have to shoot 5, 6, 7 missiles up from any air defense system to get one missile coming in if you're going to have any degree of success. They're doing that, and they've been doing that. They're running out of missiles, and we're running out of missiles to give them. Iran's not. So if this goes on like it did in the Iran-Iraq war, if you remember, for of the last four years of war, the attacks of the cities, they go back and forth, back and forth. Iran's going to win. Somebody's going to step in there.
Unless we get Rumsfeld in there offering them chemical weapons to try and finish off Iran like he did in that situation. Am I right?
We don't have any chemical weapons left, supposedly. We destroyed them all.
Really? Okay. So, you know, so let's play this out. And I know you're a military man. You're not necessarily a political guy. But given the fact that I've seen in certain instances, something like 40, 35 to 40% of the people of Israel say they can't stand Bibi Netanyahu. They think he's a crook and they want him the hell out of there. And they think the only reason he's doing mismanaging these wars and allowed October 7th to happen, their words, not mine, was because he wanted to stay in power. If this thing continues to get really ugly like this and Tel Aviv continues to get shelled and hit with missiles, how do you see the political dynamics inside Israel turning out, if you don't mind my asking?
I think Bibi Netanyahu's days are numbered very, very much. You know, his government was falling when he attacked Iran. They were having a vote of no confidence, and he attacked Iran. There's no doubt in my mind that the political reason, personal political reason for Bibi was to arrest that tendency to throw him out. And these casualties are just going to keep going up. Iran has been very circumspect. As I said again, they are following the rules of war. They go after military targets, and they hit those military targets and intelligence targets, and they hit them. Occasionally, they kill civilians. There have been some pretty bad videos come out to that effect. But they do it because Israel has packed a lot of its military and intelligence installations next to civilian infrastructure. So you can't be that discreet with some of these bigger missiles. But they're pummeling Israel right now. Israel's never, since 1948 even, 73 war, 67 war, all the fracases in between and after. It's never been pummeled like this. And then you take the fact that they're taking significant casualties still in Gaza, which is why they're killing 50 to 70 Palestinians a day as they come up to get aid, get food. It's unconscionable what they're doing.
Yeah, I saw a documentary. It's on YouTube. You should check it out. It's called The Bibi Files, and they talk about his corruption case and how his corruption case was so serious that it's what led him to go so far to the right. And they seem to assert that the only reason he's doing what he's doing is to stay in power, because he knows if he loses his title, he eventually would go back into court and they would find him guilty of corruption. Fascinating documentary, by the way, that made me think about what his real motivation is. But let me ask you about Marco Rubio's comment about the Strait of Hormuz, because he immediately switched over to China. And it's interesting that he went there. So I want to talk a little bit about Russia and China on the other half, on the backside of this. Here's Marco Rubio being questioned about if they shut down the Strait of Hormuz, I think the question was. Here it is.
Do you expect Iran to move to close the Strait of Hormuz to try to disrupt oil transportation across the world?
Well, I encourage the Chinese government in Beijing to call them about that, because they heavily depend on the Straits of Hormuz for their oil. If they do that, it'll be another terrible mistake. It's economic suicide for them if they do it. And we retain options to deal with that. But other countries should be looking at that as well. It would hurt other countries' economies a lot worse than ours. It would be, a massive escalation that would merit a response, not just by us, but from others. So, look, they're going to say what they need to say. You know, these are the things that need to happen for their own internal politics and so forth. But in the end, we're going to judge them by the actions that they take moving forward.
That's funny how he's putting it all on China. It's like, no, China has to make sure this doesn't happen. I'm not sure China's too interested in helping the United States. I also think, only because I happen to be here and I've talked to some of the people in the oil ministry and all that, that if for some reason China couldn't get its oil from the Persian Gulf, they would immediately switch the pumps over to Russia, who has plenty to be able to sell them. My thoughts.
It already has. if you'll look at the real oil statistics in the world, you'll see that it already has. And here's my great fear in that regard. And again, we're back to Kissinger and Brett Scowcroft and George Kennan's warnings to Powell. Don't ever force Russia together with China. Xi Jinping wants to build out his nuclear stockpile, indeed has started the modernization process and the building process to do just that, to match that of Moscow and the United States, not together, but to have at least 5,000 or 6,000 like Moscow and Washington do. What if he were to do that more rapidly than he possibly could with plutonium exclusively rather than uranium, which he's got a lot? He'd get it from Moscow, and Putin would probably give him the plutonium to do that and the oil, too. So, I mean, you're forcing an alliance on two countries that really don't historically favor one another. got that long border south of Vladivostok, and Putin's got Chinese in Russia than he does Russians out there south of Vladivostok. So it's a dangerous thing we're doing. It might help China go completely batshit, pardon my language, with regard to its nuclear weapons stockpile, and it might force them to get, as you said, more of their petroleum products from Russia.
You know, I was just sitting here a little while ago talking to the foreign, pardon me, the finance minister of Russia, and I was asking him about this, and you know what he told me? He said that they never expected, after they were severely castigated, sanctioned, freezing assets, getting out of SWIFT, stop the banking. I mean, it was really pretty harsh stuff, right? You know, the whole world knows. And it forced them to look at other markets, create friendships they had before but didn't have quite solidified, new ideas in their own economy. You know, Starbucks shut down. He said our hamburgers are now better than the ones that the Americans were making. It's kind of forced them into this new dynamic, which they have found to be very successful for them. And it's also kind of enriched the relationship with India and China and even Iran and all these other companies. Did no one in our country, you know, Rick and Larry's country, not look forward enough to say, you know, if we do this, we might be creating a monster? No, nobody thought of that there?
Yeah, they did think of it, and they thought of it in draconian terms. That's why I described that arc of crisis we created all the way from the Arctic Ocean down through Ukraine, down through Georgia, down to the Persian Gulf. That's a crisis arc, if you will, that we are orchestrating to try and stop this Space Road Initiative at each point where it threatens to come into Europe.
So it's all about... what I'm hearing you say, I think, is it's all about just stopping Russia from being successful. The whole idea is, you mean Germany's getting its energy from Russia? That can't be. We've got to find a way to stop that. Oh, and
yeah,
Russia.
We blew up Nord Stream to do that.
It's that simple, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's not simple, really. It's the great game, but it's the great game with nuclear weapons. It's new players, although Russia's always been in it. Britain's not there anymore. They're our poodle. At best, they're our poodle. MI6, CIA, and Quad are now the three eyes in the world, doing some very nefarious things, doing them in Israel, too. But it is a serious contest, and we've decided to not match this contest with strategic economic and trade competition, but with military force and sanctions.
Poodle, you said, huh?
Yeah, I love London. My wife and I went there for 20 years without missing a single year. Yeah. Love it. But Perfidious Albion is a great title for that place now.
Yeah, Suzanne and I honeymooned there too.
They have no real power. So as anyone in the House of Lords who's not worth his salt will tell you, we do have lots of power. It's in Washington.
Interesting. And Washington has a lot of power too. It's in... Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. Final question. I want to ask you about Ukraine because the dynamic in Ukraine is changing as a result of what's going on in Iran. The world is not looking at Ukraine these days anymore. It's almost like, oh, yeah, that's a war that's going on where it looks like the Russians are kind of kicking butt. And Mr. Trump seems to want to call Mr. Putin once a week and have a conversation with him. So that's a very different dynamic than we had 2 years ago with Mr. Biden in the White House. What do you see there, Larry?
Well, and with respect to that grand strategy I was just describing, we're content, the people behind Trump are content for now to let Russia and Ukraine just stew in their own juices. What they're allowing to happen, though, is they're allowing Russia to increase its ability to bring pressure on their strategy by taking Odessa and having the whole northern rim of the Black Sea. Once they have that, you better check with the Russians, U.S. Navy, before you go into the Black Sea.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I was just in Crimea recently, and it almost seems like if they had done the deal a year and a half ago or whenever, March of 22, if they had done that deal, Russia would end up with about half of what it has now.
Even less than that, I think. Probably about 40% or so of what it has right now. No. And Ukraine would have been a viable state. And you might could have achieved some kind of decent peace, although I know the Ukrainians would break it every day. Ukraine, I had to deal with Ukraine when I was in the State Department, the most corrupt state on the face of the earth. I'd never seen anything like it, whether it was Yulia Tymoshenko or whomever. They all were on the take. They all were oligarchs par excellence. They all didn't give a damn about their people.
Some would argue it's still.
Look at what they're doing now. They're driving around the villages and grabbing young people out of their beds, hitting them over the head and throwing them in a van, and they wake up on the front lines.
Yeah, yeah. That's a sad story, but unfortunately, it is a reality. Larry, you haven't changed a bit from when you and I were on CNN doing this. You look just as handsome.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm 80 years old plus now and feel like it.
You look great, man. And your spirit is solid. And thank you so much for giving us your time and sharing your wisdom with us. This has really been a fantastic interview. Thank you, my friend.
Why do I come to the end of my life and see my empire falling apart around my ears?
It ain't going to happen, because guys like you and I are going to prevent it from happening by just being truth tellers. I guarantee it. Thanks, Larry. Colonel, it's a pleasure. Thank you, sir. Well, and that's pretty much it for us. But, you know, it's fascinating to be able to share the perspective of what's happening, both from a worldwide standpoint, from a Russia standpoint, a China standpoint, but in particular from an American standpoint. You know, it's a country that has continually tussled with this idea of never-ending wars, and now it's worried that they're going to possibly get into another one. Will this be, you know, Iraq 2.0, but in a bigger country with a bigger military, and that might last a little longer? And I think the key point that I'm hearing from my conversation with Larry, just like I've heard from Colonel McGregor, and just like I've heard from others who are intimating this, if not just outright saying it is, you know, this thing that Israel is doing to Iran may end up being at its own peril, that it may be in the end Israel that suffers the most, and if not Israel, the Netanyahu government. Who knows? We're going to watch it. We're going to see it. We'll create the analysis. We'll bring you the news, and we'll bring you the stories. That's what we do here. It's called The Sanchez Effect, and I'm Rick Sanchez. Good night.